Hello. Welcome to Testing Contributions at Scale. Got a couple minutes before we get started here. Hi, my name is Alan Wittenauer. I currently work at Zadata, where I do lots of things, including release management, amongst other stuff. I'm an Apache member, you know, yada, 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 all the stuff you normally hear. There's my Twitter account. There's my email if you need to get a hold of me afterwards. And my website, where I actually do talk about some of this stuff in a little more detail. I'm going to tell the story of a project I'm actually not involved with anymore. Because when you talk about scale, Apache Hadoop tends to be, you know, sort of the go-to answer because it's large and big. But people don't really think about it from the how does it get tested perspective, right? And just to give you an idea of just how big it is, since 2006, there's been 32,000 Jira patches filed. So this isn't counting GitHub pull requests. This isn't counting any projects that have been split off, such like HBase or Hive. This is literally just those patches for the core Hadoop. So if you take that number and you spread it out over Hadoop's lifetime, that's about a minimum of 7 continuous integration events per day per year. That's assuming there are no retests. That assumes there are no. It's assuming equal distribution across, you know, every day. But everybody knows that the weekends tend to be a little less active than during the day. So, on an actual business day perspective, it's a lot more than 7. But let's stick with 7 for now. And to make things a little more interesting, the full test suite. If you do a Maven test, for example. It's going to take about 17 hours to run the whole thing. That includes the 22,000 JUnit tests, the I don't know how many GTest tests for the JNI code. There's CMake tests for some of the JNI code. There's bats in there. There's all kinds of things. So it's 17 hours to run the whole suite. Now, if we were to do 17 hours for all 7 events, it's 119 hours of CI time per day. And so for those of you who are dealing with builds.apache.org, you're like, oh my gosh, no, that's way too much. You already know that your jobs take too long to run now as it is. So 119 hours is killer if we had to do that, you know, all day, every day. But some good news. Hadoop is actually averaging close to 3 hours per event instead. How did the Hadoop community get it down to from 17 to 3 hours, which is like an 80% savings, which is pretty massive? Let's start at the beginning. In 2008, a person by the name of Nigel Daly introduced this idea of test patch. So test patch had a couple key goals. It not only ran the Jenkins build, but it also was for project consistency that every committer could make sure they were getting the same thing that they were looking at. Contributors, you know, they wanted to know what to change. This way we can have a standard form for them to see what kind of changes they were going to make or they need to make for their code. And you know, the other thing was it actually ran locally as well. So this way you could actually test what Jenkins was going to test on your desktop without having to wait through the queue and all that. And so the first kind of output from the script looks like this. It's not pretty. All the details are there, but it's not very pretty or very readable, and you kind of have to dig through it to see what actually is broken. But it worked, and it was there. And as far as I know, it was one of the first of its kind to really sort of do this. And, you know, what they say about great artists, right? So the test patch code was copied to 41 other projects within Apache. And so the idea spread like wildfire, and lots of projects did this, and it's like, okay, great. We kind of have a standard framework to do things with. In 2009, Apache Hadoop split into effectively 3 sub-projects. There was the Hadoop sub-project, there was the HDFS sub-project, and the MapReduce sub-project. So why was this done? Some of the goals were how to manage committer time. So you had committers who were like, oh, I'm specializing in MapReduce. I don't care about HDFS stuff or, you know, whatever. This way they could concentrate on reviewing those things and committing those things and moving that part of the source tree forward. And other people will then worry about the other parts of the source tree. This also had an impact on CI, though. Because now that there's a different Jira project for each of these individual components, and all the testing on CI for Jenkins was keyed against the Hadoop project, this now had we had to have a key for the Hadoop project, the MapReduce project, the HDFS project, later the Yarn project, and the HDDS project, and then, you know, so you end up having these different flows. You can kind of guess what happens from here, because you split the source tree, you have now split the CIs, you split the JIRAs. 2 years later, this was a terrible idea. It was really, really bad. Because in order to actually do anything, you still had to have effectively all three trees. And so in 2011, they're like, okay, we're going to rejoin the repos. We now have one big source tree repo. We're going to switch from Ant to Maven so that we can now break up how the builds work, at least. But we're going to keep the individual CIs. We're going to keep the individual Jira projects. We're going to keep all the other individual pieces. So think about what that means from a CI perspective. So you have a CI that just tests the HDFS stuff, and you have a CI that just tests the common bits, and you have just a CI that tests the MapReduce stuff. What about all the glue code in the middle? Well, that basically got ignored in nightly builds. It was never tested. If you were lucky, it got tested during the patch test phase, but more often than not, it wasn't. This also meant divergence. So people would configure test patch into different ways. And so you would have HDFS using, you know, parallelization. You had MapReduce not using parallelization. It was just a nightmare. And it stayed this way till 2015, 4 years. So you can imagine how over 4 years your own projects are, you know, diverge. So imagine doing this across 3, 4, and then 5 projects. It just became untenable, right? And so part of the reasons why 2015 was sort of the breaking point is the Hadoop community has a lot of issues, let's just put it that way. And one of those is timeliness of reviews. And so ODPI had been formed in 2014, which is a sort of an external body that said, you know, we want to help standardize Hadoop across the commercial distributions. We want to make a difference in the community. We want to do these sorts of things. How can we help? And one of the things they did, and yeah, that is my name on there because I was one of the people who made it happen. We sent out an email saying, you know, we're going to have a global day of doing nothing but bug bashing. We're going to go through Jira and we're going to fix all this stuff. The side impact of that, however, is what does this mean for the CI system? So if you're taking, at this point in time, every test was taking around 7 hours, you can't have people submit patches and take 7 hours for every patch. That's just not feasible. And keep in mind, at this point in time, builds.apache.org had maybe 7 machines just for testing Hadoop, which isn't enough. It's just flat out not enough. So something had to be done. But first, a small divergence. Let's talk about the things that we learned during this whole period of what could we do better. This is your typical review pattern for your project. Someone submits some sort of change, it does a compile, it does a test, they get the magic build passing, build failing, you know, idiotic icon thing, and then the reviewer actually looks at the code and says, oh yeah, this is good, or oh no, this is terrible, or you know, whatever. And it hopefully gets committed or something, or if there's changes required, it goes back through this loop a couple times. There's something fundamentally wrong with this pattern. And this is it. If I'm doing a patch for, let's say, the README file, why am I running the unit test? If the unit tests break, then there's something super wrong, more than likely. And the thing is, your build system doesn't treat these files the same. Most people don't have unit tests for their shell code. And if you're doing a Java project, chances are you may not have unit tests for your Python code if you're manually a Java project. Or if you're a Go project, you probably don't have unit tests for your Python code. I mean, there's all these weird combinations when you get into these large projects that a lot of this stuff just flat out isn't tested. It isn't the primary language of the project that you're working on. But your CI systems, they all think they don't know any difference. Right? They test everything. And so when you think about it, I'm sure you've heard this, right? Everyone's like, oh, fast, cheap, or good. Pick any two, right? This is really a restatement of the triple constraint theory of project management from the 50s, where they're talking about time, cost, and scope means quality. What does CI do? Well, it measures quality, right? But when you think about this chart, most of our CI systems are built that we're pushed all the way in scope. We don't really care about cost, we care about time, we just care about the scope of our tests. And this has a huge impact on runtimes, right? So put that in the back of your head. Let's go back to our pattern. And so you see the patch compile testing, pass fail, right? There's something missing here. And normally when I draw diagrams, I start with a person. I didn't this time, which I feel kind of weird about and wrong about, but I didn't. Because we're missing this part. We're missing the part when we get the feedback from the CI system, the log hunt. Your CI job failed. What's the first thing you do? You start digging through the logs to figure out what failed. If you're lucky, it's a JUnit thing, and you can go to like test analyzer and it'll say, oh, here's your JUnit failure. But if it's something else, and you're using something like Jenkins, it sucks. You get screens of this bull, and you have to scroll up and find it. And if you're in a big project with lots of stuff, you know, you could be spending 10, 20 minutes just looking at pipeline failure messages that don't mean anything until you actually get to the part. And keep in mind, if you're familiar with your project, you know where to look. If you're someone who's contributing for the first time, you're like, where do I start? So I used to support Hadoop. And one of the first things I taught new people is, don't start at the bottom of the log file, because your actual error is going to be several pages up. And they're like, what? No, that can't be. And, you know, of course, yeah, the giant stack trace you're actually looking for is the first one, and it's, you know, hours ago. That's just the way it is. Jenkins is sort of the same thing. Starting at the bottom is pointless. You almost certainly want to go up, right? So this is if you have code you're familiar with, right? Well, what happens when you put a new tool on an old code? You're like, oh, you know what? We've got all this Python code. We should really put pylint on it. We should really test this stuff. We should actually make sure our stuff is, you know, PEP8 compliant and all this, you know, stuff. You have a choice. When you introduce this new code, you have to go through and fix everything so that all those stuff that stuff passes. Or you just say, you know what? I'm going to throw pylint on it, and we'll fix it as we go. And so now your new contributor is seeing the CI messages saying, oh, this code I didn't touch failed. And they're like, what do I do, right? And the part of the diagram I didn't put on there is the part where they go, you know, screw it, I'm out of here, I'm done, your project's too hard to work with, forget it. And that's what happens, right? And so taking these lessons learned, we decided to rework the strategy in Hadoop. And so you can kind of see some things that we thought about to fix. So we had the original goals of the original test patch, you know, project consistency, actionable feedback, tool that also ran locally. We added branch support because it didn't support branches. One of the big ones is reduced load on the ASF Jenkins server, because we can't do 7 hours of testing at that point. We have to reduce the load tremendously. A better UI, cleaner output, because, you know, the original output is kind of terrible. And the original code wasn't very modular. It was just one. I don't think I have arms long enough to describe, if I were to print out the original test patch code, how big it was. And it was just kind of ridiculous. And considering it was copied everywhere, you know, I felt sorry for the people who picked it up afterwards. So just a reminder, this is what the old code looked like. And, you know, like I said, it's all there. If you're a new user, are you going to know where to start and what to look at? Probably not. So we fixed that. And this is what we changed it to. So there's a couple things on the screen I'm going to point out. You know that there's no Java stuff happening, right? This patch had shellcode changed. And it ran in 35 seconds. I mean, I don't know what 35 seconds is of 17 hours. I'm not that smart. But it's a lot. 99.something% savings. I don't know. The other thing was, is it's a little easier to read. Of course, this is a pass, so of course it's easy to read, right? But, you know, we saved a hell of a lot of time. And so it's like, okay, that's great. So what does a failure look like, just to kind of give an idea? It looks like this. There's a couple things that kind of that should stick out. It tells you what you broke. This is a huge win, because if your patch goes in and you're like, well, I don't know if that's mine or if it's pre-existing or, you know, CI is a lot of hand-waving, by the way. You know, and you not only know what you broke, what was already there, but also what you fixed. You know, people should be celebrated when they fix stuff, and sometimes the subtle stuff isn't really celebrated, right? And this check style, if you're familiar with Java check style, you know it's very, I don't know if finicky is the right word, but it's awfully close. And if you, for the stuff that you do break, we provide a diff of a log. This is the stuff that's relevant to you. Now, granted, there are times when your patch may have changed something that was adjacent to something else that was broken, and therefore, you know, you impacted that break, and then therefore that's showing up in yours, even though it wasn't your code, because you were just like changing the indent or something. Sure, but it still falls into the part of you touch the code, it's your problem now, right? This is also where reviewers can come in and say, oh, no, I recognize as a reviewer that this was a structure change or whatever, it was a pre-existing problem. You know, we're going to ignore the failure. We know it's not you, it's us, or, you know, whatever. So people saw what we did in Hadoop, and the 41 project, some of them said, yo, we're going to steal you again. This is like way better than what you wrote the first time, so we're gonna borrow it again, which is great. You know, so it's kind of dumb to have everyone having one copy of everything. Could you imagine if everyone had their own copy of HDB source code? I mean, that's kind of, you know, ridiculous, right? So we revised our goals, and we said, you know what? We're not only going to make pluggable tests, we're going to make projects pluggable too. There's no reason for all of us to have a copy of this code and divergent, and we can all learn from each other, we can all benefit from the changes we want to make, we can do all these things that open source is supposed to do. And so we did. And so that is the genesis of the Apache Yattis project. So I have to give the official spiel. It's a collection of libraries and tools that enable contribution release processes for software projects, you know, whatever. I think of it as a toolbox. So just like a toolbox, Yattis has a chisel and a hammer and a screwdriver and a wrench. And just like anything you do, you don't have to use the chisel and the hammer and the screwdriver and the wrench at the same time. They have their specialized tools. They're for special things. Use them when appropriate. Test patch is the exact same way. You don't have to use Release Doc Maker to use test patch. So I'm concentrating just on test patch, so just be aware that the project has a lot more than that. But I want to deep dive a little bit into context-sensitive testing, because this is what makes the magic. Yattis does not treat readme.sh and readme.go and readme.py and readme.rb as the same. They're not the same. Your build tools don't treat them the same. Your unit tests don't treat them the same. Why is your CI system treating them the same? It doesn't make any sense. And so we have some basic guidelines for how we treat the universe. You know, we make reasonable guesses about what a file does. You know, if I have a Python script, I should run pylint against it. If I have a readme.shell file, I should not run pylint against it, right? That's a fairly reasonable assumption. If a change has no relevant test, don't execute the test framework because the results are meaningless anyway. So if I'm giving shell code and the project hasn't told me to run unit tests, I'm not going to run unit tests. By default, test patch does not run unit tests for shell code, because 99% of the projects out there do not have unit tests for their shell code. If you do, great. You can tell Yattis to do that. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. I want to especially talk about modularization, because this is the part where people get into trouble. Test Patch was built around the idea of Maven. So multi-module Maven projects effectively break your source tree up into separate composable bits. And so you can go into a directory and say, you know, Maven install, and it'll install that part of the system. You don't have to do it the whole tree in one shot. Test Patch takes advantage of this knowledge. So if it finds multiple POM files, which is the Maven driver, it says, oh, great. I can actually break up the patch request into multiple chunks too. So if you touch directory A and there's a directory B, I'm going to go directly to directory A and do everything there. So there's an assumption there that the unit tests, for example, for module A are consistent and complete, which is sort of the Maven way, right? Everything is supposed to be self-contained. Now, if you break the rules, and Hadoop, being the project it is, breaks the rules all over the place, the project, and this is where project rules come in, you can say things like, okay, well, in order to test HDFS, I need to at least compile Hadoop Common because I need the JNI library. So you can do those sorts of things. You can cheat the system a little bit if you want. But it's a very, very key problem. So now you say to yourself, okay, great, that works for Maven because it has a structure. How do I do this with CMake? Well, if you have multiple CMake.txt files, Yetta says, great, I see you have multiple CMake.txt files. I'm going to treat them as separate routines, and I can compile them separately. And I'm going to treat them as separate things, so I don't have to build the whole thing. And so now you can kind of see how we're getting these time savings. Because if we're not doing everything, then we can shrink our scope by quite a bit. And by shrinking our scope, we reduce our time and effectively reduce our cost, but it's ASF money, so we don't care, right? Right now, the infra guys are very angry at me for saying that. And like I said, the big thing is projects can't override override the default behavior of test patch. So if they get into a situation where, you know what, we really need something weird or a custom test, HBase is a great example. HBase has tests that compile the patch against various versions of Hadoop. That's clearly HBase specific. They built it within the framework, and so they can do, you know, whatever they want. So this is a rough diagram of the architecture of test patch. So there's a very simple DOM driver, and then it goes through these things. There's a personality, which is the project code. This is my project-specific personality. Bug systems, and I have a list of this stuff, what kind of things these are later. I can talk to a bug system, so if I can talk to Jira and GitHub and get information from those systems, I can talk to robots. Robots are like what we consider the CI systems, because sometimes you're not doing CI, you're doing something weird, maybe. You have some sort of automated build system that's not really a CI system, it's, you know, some sort of other framework. Maybe you're using, you know, Airflow, I don't know, whatever. You could build a robot for it, and it would say, oh, okay, I know information about my universe based upon what the robot tells me. So like Jenkins, so this is to help you try to reduce how much auto-configuration you have to do, right? Build tools, there's a ton. I mentioned Maven, I mentioned CMake. I think the only common one we may not support is SBT, maybe, and that's even if you consider SBT common. Tests are kind of fun because things get kind of funky. So like language support, like JUnit, for example, would be something very, very specific for Java, and I guess probably Scala and the other JVM languages. But you're probably not going to have JUnit for, you know, shellcode. I mean, you might, but sure, why not? And so, and we do stack analysis. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm misspeaking. So tests is where we actually do things like, okay, this is a Python thing. I'm going to run the stack analysis for a Python. This is a Ruby thing. I'm going to run RuboCop, and, you know, RuboCop is always going to yell at you because that's all RuboCop does. You know, all those sorts of things. I'm going to run CheckStyle because, you know, CheckStyle's angry about the world and, you know, whatever. But then those unit tests, we do run unit tests, and we run unit tests, we actually try to grab the log output of those unit tests and then generate some sort of nice report. I don't think I put a slide in for this shows you that. By the way, secret side note, JUnit likes to lie to you if you're using the Java stuff for Surefire. One of the problems we discovered with Hadoop is if JUnit runs out of memory and can't fork, it may not tell you that the test failed. It may not even report that the test exists at all, because that report is written after JUnit finishes. And so it just disappears from the planet. So be aware of that if you're a Java person. So that's fun. And so this is sort of the general architecture of how the system works. So build tool support, all this. I mean, we're pretty much doing all the really super common stuff. Ant, autoconf, cmake, Gradle, Maven, make, and no build. No build is fun. So let's say you're doing a project that's completely shell. What build tool do you use for shell code? There really isn't one, right? And so you can tell Hadoop, or you can tell Testpatch, yeah, don't look for a build tool. Just do your stack analysis and be done. What's fun about build tools is, so Avro uses Testpatch, and they built their own custom build tool. And you're like, why? Avro supports, 12 different languages, I think? And all those languages uses their build tool for that language. And so Yetis, Testpatch would get super confused, because it's like, well, here's Make, and here's, you know, here's Maven, I don't know what to do. And so what they did is they built a custom build tool that knows how to run the build tool for that particular language in that particular directory. And so you can do those sorts of fancy things. Bug systems, we can read and write to everything but Bugzilla, GitHub, GitLab, Jira. I keep thinking there's one more, but maybe not. Compile language support, I just added Go like a release ago. Interpreter language support. We even do fun things with JavaScript with JSHint. So JSHint can yell at you just as well as anything else can. You know, all the usuals are there. Perl critic is always fun because people are like, wait, someone actually still cares about Perl. Yep, we still do. Tool support. This is a big, complicated list. Where do we start? One of the more interesting ones is we made the switch from find bugs to spot bugs. We run find bugs in sort of like, well, you can run find bugs, but we actually tell you should really, really consider about switching to spot bugs. Various doc formats are fun. So Java doc, Scala doc, Maven site, we do some stuff with. MD may be a bit of a surprise. So we run markdown lint to actually make sure that your markdown is somewhat stable. I know it's missing on this list. That's why it's driving me crazy. I added checkmake support, so we can actually verify that your make file is sane. Which has been kind of interesting because it's a very opinionated linter. Unit test support, runtime support. I want to talk about Docker. Docker is a bane of the universe in many, many ways because Docker is very, very opinionated in how the world should work. And one of the more interesting things we've discovered is that people love using Docker for CI because you can say, hey, here's my tooling, and you know, I don't have to worry about installing stuff on the node. That's great. But then they do things like the ASF does, where they run two executors. And there's no, like, runtime limits on these Docker containers. And bad things happen when, like, you know, one of the Docker containers says, yeah, I'm going to eat all the memory, right? And Jenkins is kind of broken in that if you try to... if you don't use the Jenkins pipeline code to spawn your Docker container, if you try to abort the job, it'll be like, oh, well, yeah, I got it. That's nice. I don't care. I'm going to continue running even though Jenkins thinks it's dead. So that's fun. So we modified the Yetis code to actually deal with all of those weird little problems. And so you can do things like, okay, I want memory limits on my container. Testpatch actually intercepts the abort that Jenkins sends, and then we actually keep track of the container ID, so we can kill the container. We can actually build, here's something that's interesting and fun that people don't really think about. So you have your CI system, and you almost always give it an image name. What are you using to test your Docker file to make sure it still works? Hopefully you're using some other CI system to also test a Docker file, but most people don't do that. They build it once, they forget it, they shoot it on their way, and they're like, okay, great, it's working. Testpatch can actually build a Docker file and then run itself within that Docker image that it just built. So this means you can actually make the contribution of a change to the Docker file as part of your CI system. So you can actually test it as you're doing it. And that's been a huge, huge, huge win for the projects that have used that sort of system. Other things, we have various reporting formats. I've been showing the Jira one. I'm going to show the brief text one later on. And you can always build your own. Someone just made a patch to the GitHub one within the past couple weeks, actually, where now it prints like hearts instead of plus one, minus one, which is kind of neat. So you can do, because GitHub doesn't really support color except for emojis, and so it's kind of hard to do a nice report with it. And so I said, okay, we're going to change the, instead of using plus one, minus one, we're going to use hearts. And you can say, oh, a red heart is bad, and a green heart's good, and a blue heart is, well, hopefully it worked, you know, whatever. Support multiple JVMs, all kinds of stuff. So robots, I talked about some of these. Azure Pipeline, Circle CI, Sierra CI, GitLab CI, Jenkins, Semaphore CI, Travis CI. I've got a, I have a patch to play with drone. This is probably the big ones that most people have even heard of, if that. There's other ones out there. Some of them are just sort of bad. Some of them are sort of good. Test patch has a tendency to, you learn how broken your CI system is, and you question whether you're sane or whether you want to use it or not. It has a lot of, so when we build a report, you saw that there's the URL for the report. I'm sort of astounded how many CI systems don't actually give you that URL until you commit an artifact. So we, like for Circle CI, we cheat and we tell people, okay, commit an artifact, then we can figure out the URLs, and then we put that in the report, because it doesn't make it available until you do a publish, which is like, okay, that's, I guess that works, but it's kind of bad. Azure Pipelines happily gives you, the only URL it gives you is to a page that's full of JavaScript, and you can't actually link to individual files. So you're just kind of like, eh, well, whatever, you're screwed. So, you know, I've been talking about my opinion of how things work. Of course, you know, every book review has someone on the back cover that says, oh, this is better than cats. Oh, that's a play, because it doesn't work. You know, whatever. Josh was introducing test patch into Accumulo, and he says, okay, I'm going to test it, and I'm going to change our README file. And he's like, Yetis didn't do anything. And I'm like, well, yeah, it did. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. It didn't have anything to do, which is very different than it didn't do anything, right? There was nothing for it to do. You touch the README file. What do you expect it to do? And it's like, okay, now I get it. It's like, okay, the light bulb has gone off. Yeah, there was nothing to test. Yeah, exactly. So we talked about the triple constraint model of project management. And you're saying to yourself, okay, great. You've reduced the time to take by reducing the quality because you've changed the scope. So how do we get scope back? Because, you know, we can't not assume that everything's great just because we test this part, because, you know, let's face it, our unit tests are bad. Everybody's unit tests are bad. They never want to admit it, but their unit tests are bad. So, and someone always has an assumption on some other part of the code that isn't documented, and someone makes a change there, and you're like, oh, the unit tests pass, and you're like, but yeah, but the whole system fell apart, right? And so how do we get back to good? How do we get back to this, where the scope is good? This is what your schedule-full builds are for. And so in the case of Hadoop, for example, every day, there is a 17-hour job that tests everything. If you think about it, that's a pretty good price to pay, because when you are doing with a big source tree, and you, let's say you have 10 commits that day, if there's a problem from the previous day, you know exactly which 10 places to look. And it's actually not that bad. I mean, chances are, you know, most projects have this, you know, this dumb little, oh, build passing, build failing, that no one ever looks at, except to know that the project isn't paying attention enough to actually, they need a damn icon to look at. You know, if you have a report come that says, oh, this is what failed the day before, versus, you know, you can kind of get an idea of where to look. And, you know, that works, right? But then you're like, but, you know, if I do a full build, how do I get that nice little report? You're like, yeah, how do you get that nice little report? Well, what if we treat the entire source tree as a patch? And it's like, oh, that actually should work, right? So we tell test patch, you know what, our patch is actually going to be empty. Just go ahead and treat the entire source tree as a new contribution. And you can kind of say, oh, well, that means we can build a report based upon the entire source tree, and so we can actually kind of expect to see, we know what fails, and if we introduce a new tool, like we added some Python code or Ruby code, and we're now running PyLint, you can kind of see what the impact of that is, because now it's part of your report. You didn't really have to do anything. And so we kind of shortcutted this to something called Quality Build Tool, QBT. And so QBT goals kind of has what you'd expect, right? stop missing tasks. We're going to reduce the load on Jenkins, consistency. But the big thing is it's about comprehensive follow-up. And what is the actual state of the source tree? I mean, when you do a CI system, I've noticed a tendency to be, okay, we tested everything, it's all good. But if you reduce that time, and it's okay, now what is your actual state of the source tree? You don't really know the answer unless you do another full build. But then usually that's like, okay, am I actually getting the same reporting? And it's like, well, now we know the answer. We totally know the answer to this question. And so here's Yedis's last report. We know that we have bugs in our checksal and Javadoc settings. Actually, I know because I'm the one who added them, so they're my fault. But I know. And so this is the brief text. This is what whenever there is a build and we get a commit, we run this, because Yedis isn't that big of a project. We don't have enough contribution to really do it every night. Hadoop does this every day. They get one of these reports. And it was too long to put on the screen. So you can take that any way you want about the state of the resource tree. But it gives you an idea of, what changed. And so in the case of Hadoop, they'll have 10 commits, and they'll have, we see there's a new check dollar or whatever, and they can kind of get an idea. And so this is how we solve, this is how we go back to good, while also keeping the time down for the everyday stuff. And that's all I've got. Some random trivia that's kind of interesting. There's the website, there's the mailing list, there's the Twitter account. We just released 0.11. The new stuff in there was the Go support for various stuff. There was something else that's shiny. There's a bunch of new, there's a handful of things in 0.11 that's shiny and new. 0.10 was the last super huge release where we broke a bunch of stuff. And something I'm very proud of is that if you go through the alphabet of Apache, there is only one Y, and that's us. That is this project. And so we actually completed the alphabet, which I think when Yedis became a top-level project, Shane actually does his normal, alphabet of the Apache organization. He jumped straight to Y, because they've been waiting for it to be complete for a very long time. And so we completed it. And so that's all I've got. Because I know that everyone's going to go get drunk in, 10 minutes. So I don't want to hold you from that. Anyway, thanks a lot. Any questions? Everything's good? Make sense? Sure. Yeah. So we basically run everything twice. Because if you think about it, your static analysis and your actual compile, if we skip the unit tests, your actual compile and your actual static analysis is generally very fast. And so we can take a before picture and an after picture and then do a comparison of those two logs and say, here's what's different. The unit tests we do not do that with. Because if you think about how unit tests work, there tends to be coverage of multiple things at once, and so it's kind of hard to say, okay, this is the before picture, this is the after picture, and if you're something like Hadoop, so Hadoop Common, actually that's a bad example. Let's do Hadoop HDFS. Hadoop HDFS takes an hour and a half to run unit tests, and that's with parallelization, by the way. If we were to do that twice, that effectively doubles our time, because the rest of the time is pretty minuscule compared to the rest of it. And so we do sort of cheat with test patch and say, we're only going to run unit tests once. We're hoping that you as the committer or the person reviewing can say, okay, yeah, this is the part. Now, the benefit that we do is that we do break apart, test patch does go through the JUnit logs, and we'll say, this is the unit test that failed. And this is the reason why. That actually is in that report. Same thing with find bugs. There's a couple others that we specifically pull out the parts so you don't have to log hunt. For some stuff, like Javadoc, for example, Javadoc has a tendency to be very verbose, let's say, and will sometimes fail for the wrong reasons. And in some of those cases, it's like, we can only do so much. So does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay, it's actually very hard to see people. Yes. Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, tell you what, let's do this. This could be very bad. Oh, you know what? I'm an idiot. I actually have Yes checked out. I should do that instead. Let me show you the horror that is a personality file. I shouldn't say that, should I? Right now, you guys are all looking. Oh, what porn does he have? Don't tell me you're not, because I know you are. Where am I going? I can go there, that's fine. I'm going to pull up HBases, which is a little crazy, but it's not as crazy as Hadoop, so it makes a little more sense. So the first thing you're probably saying is, this looks like shellcode. And you'd be absolutely correct. Nothing pisses off Python and Ruby folks as much as, oh, it's not over there. Oh, crap, you can't see that. Well, I shouldn't have gave away the joke, didn't I? So you couldn't see what porn I had. Okay, that works out well. Let me make this bigger, because I'm sure it's super tiny. Readable, is that okay? Good. You're probably saying to yourself, this is shell code. Oh my god, what's wrong with you? Nothing pisses off Ruby and Python folks more than saying we write everything in shell. It also helps end the debate of, are you doing Ruby or are you doing Python? The answer is we're doing shell because it's the most portable. Right now the Python folks are having a cow about that, but we actually have people who run test patch on Windows. And this also gets us out of the whole, oh, well, you need to have this Python module installed and it only works on, no. We do pretty much everything in shell. This has good and bad benefits. One of the big ones is we do literally run pretty much everywhere. It's very Bash 3 compliant, so it even works on OS 10. Let me see if I can find my mouse here. So this is HBase making some decisions as to what they want to do. And so I want to kind of highlight this. And so when they do a unit test, they actually pass profiles to their unit test, so they can do that kind of level of customization. You'll also notice there's this for module and change modules line. You can, because this routine is in the, you can call this routine in the personality, this means you have full control over what each step that test patch is going to do for your project. So if you have a directory that you know you do not have unit tests for, you can just say, you know what, we're going to pull it out of the list and test patch, do the other unit tests for the other directories all you want. But we're going to pull this one out. You're not even going to know it existed. It's going to disappear. And test patch is like, okay, oh, I don't see it anymore. Okay, I guess I'm not working on that one. There are things you can also, to make things like this a little easier, there is a yetx excludes file. And so you can tell test patch, you know what, these files and these directories, just ignore. This is particularly useful for Go code. How many of you have worked with Go? Okay, for those of you who have, you know how interesting and fun Go modules can be, because you basically have to import other people's code into your repo, because, Google, monorepo. And let's say you've decided on a particular code style. You know that whatever you import is not going to be that code style. You know this, right? And you import stuff, so we started working with Test Patch with Eve, which is a Linux Foundation project, and they import all kinds of stuff. And so we put Test Patch on just to kind of see what came out. And 99% of the problems were with Amazon code and Google code, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I trust this code anymore. But you put an excludes file and you're done. So you can there's all kinds of ways to manipulate the system to do whatever it is you need to do. So yeah, custom build tool, nothing. No big deal. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. Yeah. So one of the big ones is that we can test things that Jenkins doesn't have built-in support for. That's a key one. And so Avro, or Hive, is actually a great example of this. So like they run the Apache rat checks with test patch, but then do all their other stuff with straight Jenkins. The other thing is test patch was written with that in mind. So you can do things. So let's say you're running in a Docker container. And of course, if you're in a Docker container, you probably want to limit how many volumes leak into your container. So if you're, you can actually configure test patch to say, okay, this you've built, as you build these files, I want you to copy them to this other directory, and the other directory can then be fed to Jenkins to generate the test results and all those things you're used to. The other thing to keep in mind is that your new contributors, they're not going to know to look there. Your new contributor is almost certainly not going to know to look at Jenkins for your test results. This goes back to, I'm a new user, I don't know anything about your project, I just want to fix a simple bug, and the thing failed, where do I go from there? And when you use Jenkins or something like it all day, every day, these things are automatic. You go, okay, I'm going to go to the build, I'm going to go to the console, and okay, the console looks fine, okay, I'm going to go to the test results, and okay, I'm going to see that this failed. Those things are totally brand new to people, and if they're not used to that universe. And so by using test patch, we build this nice report, and they can see exactly what failed. Now, we do link to like the console, so if you want to dig deeper, you don't have to hunt for it and all that. We do all those sorts of things. But that's one of the big wins, because there's a lot of thinking around how new users interact with the system. Because you're absolutely right. This information is available. I mean, you can go to the artifacts and see it. Jenkins will do this nice report. But your new users may not know how to do that. Yeah. I can actually show you one if you want. No, I have not. Now ask me if I care. Let's go to HBase, because theirs are always pretty. HBase just upgraded, so I know that they've got the new stuff. This is the one with the emojis. Let's see if we can find one. See if they've. This is one without emojis, but. Oops. That's not what I meant to do. And just so people don't freak out, having test patch write to GitHub like this is optional. The problem is that the way the Apache Foundation configures Jenkins does not allow us to write to the normal build failed thing that you normally see with most, GitHub projects. So the projects that are using test patch tend to do this. We're working on how to reduce this output because, like in this one, you can see there's like a couple different, because they retested a couple times, it generated multiple reports, and that's a thing we need to work on. But to answer your specific question of do you actually give like the input, actually here's the findbugs output and the JUnit output, and here's the logs. And so if you look at these logs, they go directly back to builds.apache.org, and you can get the diff if we want. I'm going to spare you the details there. And there's a link to the console. So you get all this information in the PR, and you can go do exactly what it is you want to look at without much hassle. And for your new users, there's, if they can't read URLs, you might have other problems to deal with. Hopefully they can work out URLs. So, okay. Anything else? Now you're all going to run out and try it, right? You'll notice, by the way, I did not show any command lines. Command lines tend to be a little gnarly because as people configure stuff when they start out, they get to be like this huge, and then they go, "Oh, wait, I can make this little shell code that actually has all my settings in it." Yeah, that's usually the easiest way to go. But it's not unusual to have super long command lines, and eventually, you know, put that in a script, and then that calls, you know, whatever. Anyway, I think this is the last question. So if that's it, you guys can go get alcohol now. Awesome. Thanks a lot.